Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
You being here. As you may have guessed, this is not Mark Kohler on the Mark Kohler Show. And first of all, thank you for tuning in or downloading on the podcast if you're listening to this after the fact and running on the treadmill, as Mark likes to say. We appreciate you if you're listening live or if you're downloading this and listening to it later. We certainly appreciate you tuning in to the Mark Kohler Show. Like I said, as you may have guessed, I am not Mark J. Kohler. I do share a middle initial with him. This is Jerem J. Bergeson. Jerem Bergeson. I'm an attorney for KKOS Lawyers, Mark's law firm, here in the Cedar City, Utah office. I appreciate the opportunity to host the show today. Mark is out of the office. He's out on a well-deserved, I believe, family vacation this week. So he's asked me to fill in for him today. So we hope to be able to answer a lot of questions. Today is the open forum show. I'm excited for it. It always keeps me on my toes. So I'm excited about doing that. Anyway, appreciate everybody being here and appreciate Mark letting me have this opportunity. It may not sound like it, but I actually was a broadcast journalism major in college, so I have a little bit of experience, usually not on the air, but I did work at a radio station, at least as an intern, answering phone calls on a sports radio station. So if I run out of questions, we may end up making this a little bit of a sports talk radio show. You never know. Mark is wearing his University of Utah gear in one of his recent videos, so I may make this a BYU chat show. We'll talk about Taysom Hill for Heisman or something like that. Right. Anyway, appreciate everybody being on the being here, and I do want to go through. First of all, sorry. This is the open forum show. I've got some questions that have been emailed to Mark. I really appreciate that. If you have questions during the show, if you're listening live, there are two ways to get me those questions. One, we would love to have live calls. If you want to call in and talk to me live, I will answer those questions that you have as much as I can to the best of my ability. And like Mark always says, if I can't answer it, I will take note and find out and get the answer back to you. The other way would be to type them in the chat window. I guess there are three ways. Type them in the chat window. I'll take a look at them there and answer them. So phone calls get the first priority. Questions in the chat window would get second priority. And third priority, you can go ahead and email them directly to me. My email address is Jerem, J-A-R-O-M, as in Mary, at kkoslawyers.com. If you've got calls, call in. That's the first priority. If you've got questions, second will be in the chat window. Third will be any emailed questions that I get. But I've got a list of questions that people have sent in. We love your questions, so please feel free to send one in to me if you haven't already gotten it in. I do want to go through some of the upcoming live events that Mark's going to be talking at, speaking at, and Matt as well, and even me a little bit later in the fall. If you get the newsletter, you've seen these, but just to go through them real quickly, coming up on August 16th, looks like Mark is going to be in Salt Lake City for tax and legal strategies for real estate investors. That's sponsored by Renatus. So if you can make it out to that event, it's 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on August 16th. On September 4th, Mark's going to be in Portland, Oregon. He'll be speaking on tax and legal strategies, obviously, up there. It's going to be a two-hour presentation, two or three hours, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on September 4th, which is a Thursday. That's sponsored by NWREIA Portland. if you're going to be up in the Great Northwest in September, you can see him there. He's also going to be speaking in Portland on the 6th for a full day, Saturday, September 6th, at 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Portland, so you can make it out to that. On that same day, if you're in Southern California, Matt Sorensen's going to be speaking in Costa Mesa, California, with a presentation called Do-It-Yourself Retirement Workshop. So he'll be there in Costa Mesa. That's an all-day, or 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. So you can get your monthly dose of Matt Sorensen in Costa Mesa on September 6th. September 10th through the 12th, there is the Utah Association of Realtors Convention in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, just across the Tetons from where I was born in Driggs, Idaho. Anyway, just maybe too much information about me, but anyway, I know that area. Mark's going to be there speaking to the Association of Realtors. I don't know if he's going to be speaking every day, but you can get more information by clicking on the link in the newsletter for that. On the September 16th through the 18th, looks like that's Matt. Yeah, Matt will be in San Francisco, California for all-day classes at the IRA Institute, talking about self-directed IRAs. Obviously, that's his specialty, although Matt knows plenty about other areas of the law as well, but definitely our self-directed IRA guru with his book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. September 17th, Matt's going to be in Riverside, California, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. With another self-directed IRA and real estate class sponsored by New Wealth Advisors. Then finally, the Wealth Transformation Workshops. Look into these. These are really where Mark can jam-pack a lot of information into a relatively short amount of time. They are all-day workshops, but they're well worth it. He's going to be in Sacramento, California, on October 18th. He'll be in Seattle, up in the Great Northwest again on November 8th, in Orange County, so close to his home, on November 22nd. And then he gets the real tough assignment to be in Honolulu on December 13th. I do want to let you know also, for those of you who live in Utah, I will be speaking around the state regarding estate planning, especially for farmers and ranchers, and also for real estate professionals, kind of combining those two sets of people, and they have a lot of overlapping interests, talking about estate planning and how if you own land or business interests, estate planning is really important. I'll be doing that kind of locally throughout late November and early December. I'll be in Logan, Utah, Vernal, Utah. Now they're all Utah, but Logan, Vernal, Richfield, Kanab, Cedar City, and St. George this fall. So if you want to get more of me, which, man, who could blame you? You can do that this fall. You can see me in person and see that I am just as bald as I am in the photo on the company website, on the KKOS website. Anyway, we do have Chet Dalton on the line from KNE. I want to get to him. He was gracious enough last minute to come in and give a quick tax tip, and we certainly appreciate him doing that. So I think we'll go ahead and bring him on the line whenever we can get him. I don't know if that's working for Lisa. Chet, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jerem. Can you hear me?
Yep. Gotcha. Appreciate also Lisa Owens on the board. And really, Chet, I do appreciate you on really short notice putting together a tax tip. What do you got for us?
Well, it's nothing really groundbreaking. I basically just wanted to inform the clients that I had a client today who came in and said, we got to get my net income lower. We've got to get our net income lower. Problem is we're working in on 2013 tax, and certainly we're well into the 2014 tax year. So, you know, I want to remind the listeners out there that it's very important to sit down with your tax accountant and implement those strategies now, because there are several strategies that require you to implement them in the year of operation. Some of the bigger ones, in fact, like paying your children. If you want to have a good paper trail, paying your children, well, certainly you've got to cut them regular checks during the year in which you want deduction. Same's true for a 401k. I mean, you need to establish a 401k, and if you're looking to max it out, you know, you need to make sure that you have the applicable wages and salaries that'll allow you to maximize that benefit. and just a simple IRA. I mean, if you don't contribute to those by tax day, essentially those are lost. So, you know, our planning ideas and strategies are somewhat limited if we push past the April 15th deadline and further are pushed back if we don't look at your books and determine where you sit currently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's called planning for a reason. I mean, it's hard to plan after the fact. So if you're looking to save on taxes and you want to take advantage of these deductions, you want to take advantage of contributing or setting up or contributing to a 401k or an IRA or pay your kids during the year, it's hard to go back, if not impossible, to recreate those sorts of things. So we recommend, and I'm sure you do over at K&E as well, I mean, from a legal standpoint, we love it when our clients will come in on a yearly basis or at least call and set up an appointment for maybe 15 minutes to a half hour saying, here's my situation now, here's what's changed, here's what hasn't changed, what can we do to take advantage of tax breaks and in our, on our side, you know, asset protection and or what's changed. Do I need a new business entity or do I need an estate plan now or do I need to change my estate plan? You know, it's just setting these things up is great. That's better than 90% of America, but you got to maintain them and you got to maintain and roll with the punches on the tax side too.
Absolutely. You know, I really do love my clients to take a proactive approach towards their taxes. And, you know, it really does pay off dividends to them.
Okay. Sounds great, Chet. Anything else for today?
I believe that'll do it, Jerem.
Okay. If you want to get a hold of Chet, why don't you tell folks, he's a PTC personal tax consultant over at K&E, how they can get a hold of you.
You can just call our office at 435-865-5866. If you're a potential client, certainly we can set up something where we can have a quick interview. If you're a current client, certainly you can just ask them to budge you back, and I'll be happy to take your call.
Outstanding. Thanks a bunch, Chet. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Jerem. We'll see you.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Well, again, that was Chet Dalton. He's with Kohler & Ayer, personal tax consultant over there. You know, I can't say enough about the good work that Kohler & Ayer does. They pick up the tax side where maybe we can get to a certain point, and we do the same thing for them on the legal side where they may be able to make suggestions, but, you know, you need to talk to an attorney, and we may be able to make suggestions, but you need to talk to a CPA or a tax consultant, somebody who specializes in that. So, you know, Mark's a CPA and an attorney, so he's got both sides of the house, and it's real nice when we can work together and help you out with your needs. I know that the next person we were going to bring on was our legal tipster, which is our newest attorney here in the law firm at KKOS, which is Kevin Kennedy, who's working with Matt Sorensen down in the Phoenix office. I'm not sure if we've got him on the line. I don't know. Maybe Lisa can let me know. If we do have him on the line, we can bring him on.
Sure.
He's there.
Hey, can you hear me?
Kevin. Yes,
hey.
I can hear you. Appreciate you calling in. Sounds like you had some issues with one phone and had to switch over to another.
Yeah, no worries. Not a problem.
Well, we appreciate you, Kevin. What do you got for us?
All right, Jerem. So my legal tip today is for those listeners and clients who, you know, who have a 401k, and I know we were just talking about that a few minutes ago, or they're thinking about maybe rolling their funds over into a solo 401k for their small business.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have heard that they can borrow money from their 401k, and the same is true of a 403b plan or a 457 government plan. The concept is awesome. You know, who better to borrow money from and pay interest to than yourself?
Right.
Then you can pretty much use the loan for anything you want. But there can be a little confusion as to when you get into the details. So here's just a few things to keep in mind when considering getting a loan from your 401k. And for the Utah Ute fans out there, I can repeat myself at any point.
That's well appreciated, Kevin. Thank you. Go on.
Yes. So first, For the W-2 wage earners who have their 401k with their employer, your employer will typically have all the forms you'll need to get the loan, and they may have some restrictions on how you use the loan, so you'll want to just check with your employer. But for you entrepreneurs who have your solo 401k plan for your business, since you're the employer and the employee, there's really no restriction on what you can use the loan for. But my point here is, since you're the employer as well, it's really important that you dock up the transaction in the form of a promissory note.
Right.
So obviously keeping good records along the way, keep a good accounting of the overall transaction from start to finish is going to be crucial. So that's number one. Second, number two, a lot of our clients ask us, well, how much can they borrow? Here's how it works. If your 401k balance is $100,000 or greater, you can borrow $50,000. So, for example, if your 401k balance is $800,000, how much can you borrow, Jerem?
$50,000, Kevin.
There you go. If your 401k balance is less than $100,000, you can only borrow 50% of it. So, for example, if your 401k balance was $80,000, Jerem, how much would you be able to borrow?
No more than $40,000.
Boom. You got it. So some people ask, well, if you have your 401k investments in real estate or some hard asset, the balance of your 401k was based on the fair market value of the property.
Right.
So that's number two. Number three, like any loan, you've got to pay it back. So a lot of people get a little bit confused how this works. The general rule is that you have 5 years to pay it back.
Yep.
What's that, Jerem?
Yeah, I said yep, exactly.
Yeah, but if you use the funds to purchase a primary residence, your principal residence, the loan term can actually be up to 30 years. But otherwise, it's 5 years to pay it back. The interest rate on the 401k loan is going to be the prime rate plus one. So right now, the prime rate is 3.25, so the interest rate would be 4.25. And as I already said, the nice thing is that that interest will go right back into your 401k plan.
Right.
And the IRS requires that payments be made quarterly, so clients and listeners will want to keep that in mind. And then
finally, you can't just do a lump sum, right? You can't say, I'm going to borrow $10,000. I'm going to pay interest, but I'm going to pay it all back in 5 years and not make any other payments. You can't do that, correct?
Exactly. The IRS has a very plain explanation. They want substantially equal payments made quarterly during the course of the term. So,
okay.
Exactly. Some people want to know, Jerem, well, what happens if you don't pay it back? What are the consequences? And
right.
The consequences are any amount not paid back by the expiration of the loan under the terms of the promissory note, it's considered a distribution, and it would be taxed and penalized accordingly. So
right. And I don't know if you know this, Kevin, and I'm not putting you on the spot because I don't know this. I don't know if I know this for sure either. But do you know if you don't pay it back, if it's counted as a distribution and it's taxable in the year that you actually loaned yourself the money, or if it's taxable in the year you don't pay it back? Maybe you don't know that. If not, that's fine, and I'll try to find out for the listeners. But do you have any idea?
That is a great question, Jerem. I would probably defer to Mark as the tax guy on that.
Yeah.
But I do want to make the point that many clients of ours are going to go and get a 401k loan from their 401k. With their employer, and they're gonna want to know, well, what happens if you switch jobs or if you quit and you have the loan amount outstanding? What happens in that scenario? And the answer is that most employer plans are going to require that you pay off the loan within 60 days.
Hmm.
But one thing to keep in mind, if your new employer allows 401k loans, then you may be able to just roll over the amount of your prior loan to the new 401k. And if you're going to be rolling over into a solo 401k as a small business owner, then of course that would be the case. Jerem, one other thing that I want to bring out here. Sorry for the long legal tip here.
I love it. I love it because it's just going to be me in the open forum show. So as much time as you want to take.
you know I would stay on with you, but I have an appointment. So a lot of our clients are loving their self-directed IRAs or their regular IRAs, and they're wanting to know, well, can I take a loan from your IRA? And unfortunately, you can't do that. So just keep in mind that it's a different animal with your 401k versus your IRA. And if you did take out a loan from your IRA, the entire amount would actually be deemed a distribution for tax purposes. So some pretty heavy consequences if you try to play that. But anyway, long story short, Jerem, especially for entrepreneurs who have their side business and would like to maybe adopt a solo 401k plan, you know, hopefully this provides just a little more guidance on one of the many benefits of the 401k, which is that you can take a loan for personal use. So that's all I've got.
Outstanding, Kevin. I appreciate that tip, and you know, I love that tip so much. It's actually something I'm doing in my own life. I bought a house a couple years ago that didn't have a finished backyard, and so we're wanting, you know, my daughter is getting to the age where she needs somewhere to play, and right now our backyard, I work up here in Cedar City, but I live down in St. George, Utah, which is about 40 minutes away, and it's a lot hotter there. Our backyard, nothing grows there. Weeds will grow in our street, but they don't grow in our backyard. It's like the surface of the moon back there. I call it a moonscape. So I am actually going to be, I'm in the process of doing this, of borrowing 50% of what's in my 401k with the law firm and using those funds to put some actual grass and plants back there. Hopefully they'll survive. We're going to have to put some good soil back there. But it's an excellent, you know, and then instead of going and getting a home equity loan or something and paying a lender interest, I'm paying myself the interest. So it's actually an investment in my retirement when I pay it back. And it gives me some cash to go ahead and do that sort of thing in my backyard, which sorely, sorely needs it. So I appreciate the tip. Why don't you go ahead and let people know how they can get a hold of you?
Sure, yeah. I can be reached by phone, which my number is 602-761-9798, or email Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, at kkoslawyers.com. And I'm glad you had me on, Jerem, and I want to hear in the future how your backyard goes, so keep us posted on that.
I will. If I host the show again, or maybe when I give a legal tip, I know there'll be, you know, all kinds of people who want to know how it went. So I may force that on Mark when I'm on the show sometime in the future. Yeah. I appreciate it, Kevin.
Sounds
Thanks
good.
A bunch for coming on.
Thanks, Jerem.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. All righty. So, again, that was Kevin Kennedy with our law firm, KKOS Lawyers, out of the Phoenix office. He's our newest addition to the law firm. He's doing great work down there, working with Matt, doing a lot of stuff with self-directed retirement accounts. And that last point, I just want to get back to that, because this is the open forum show, and I'm the only person on it, so I'm going to be answering questions for the rest of the show. But I do want to just reiterate what Kevin said, that last point he made, which is we weren't talking about borrowing retirement accounts, which retirement accounts would include IRAs. You can't borrow funds in that way from an IRA, whether it's a Roth or a traditional or a SEP or simple. Those kinds of accounts don't qualify. It's only if you have a 401k that you're able to take advantage of that ability to borrow funds from the 401k. So please don't get those mixed up and think that you can take a loan out of your IRA. You're not allowed to do that. So don't hang up if you've called in, or don't log off. But it is going to be me for the next roughly 35 minutes answering these questions that have been sent in. I have some, but I don't know if I've got enough questions to last the whole hour. I don't know how verbose I can be. I can try to be long-winded and take a lot of time, but that doesn't make for great entertaining radio. So if you have a question, and you it's burning, and you want an attorney to answer it, or at least try, then please call in or send me an email or type it in the chat window. Oh my goodness, I see that we have a live caller. So let me, before we get to that live caller, real quickly, I do want to let people know who have sent in questions and are waiting for answers. Some of you sent in questions that Mark would be able to answer, or another CPA or tax professional would be able to answer, but I'm not comfortable answering that question here during this time. So I'm going to be answering the legal questions and some questions that are combined legal and tax. I'll answer the legal portion of that. Some of you, if you send in a question and it doesn't get answered, I'm probably not going to run out of time. So what that means is that I skipped it because it's a tax question. And you can either resubmit that question the next time Mark does an open forum show, or you can call and get a consult with Mark or somebody else in the accounting firm to answer that question in order to get that taken care of for you. But it sounds like we do have, speaking of people named Mark, a live caller whose name is Mark, who's called in and has a question. So let's bring him on. Mark, are you there? Hello, Mark?
Jerem?
Yes, Mark. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you calling in. Lisa's put a little note up here in the window about what your question's about, but why don't you go ahead and tell me what your situation is, and we'll see if we can't get your question answered.
Yeah. Neil, thanks. I appreciate you taking the call. We're currently looking at converting, or at least moving our business from an LLC into a standard C corporation. And before we do so, we just wanted to get a better understanding and perspective of the in doing so.
What do you do? What kind of business does the LLC do?
The business is an insurance business. So essentially it's insurance.
So insurance, like brokers sell insurance and get paid that way?
Correct. It's an exclusive agency owner insurance business with Allstate.
Okay. Perfect. So you get paid by Allstate. I guess you're kind of an independent. Your entity is a contractor with Allstate, correct?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Okay. And they 1099 you for what they pay you at the end of the year?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you asked this question. It's a good one. Is your LLC currently, are you the 100% owner, or is it you and a spouse or some partners, or who owns the LLC?
100% owner. Yeah, 100% owner at this point.
You're the 100% owner. So
correct.
You don't file a tax return at all for the LLC. It's a disregarded entity, so you're not filing a tax return at all. Everything just flows through to you?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Okay. All right. And have you talked to anyone at all about the C corporation? I'm just wondering how the C corporation got in the mix, or if you can tell me why.
Yeah, I can give you a little bit more background. Essentially, we're trying to utilize some previous funds that were part of a previous employer's 401k, and there's a program. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. Rollover as a business startup, and essentially we've got some debt in the business that we'd like to pay off. And so in order to do so, we can roll the 401k into a 401k plan that would have to be a C corporation that can then in turn own, the 401k will then own a portion of the business, thus infusing the cash to help us pay off the debt. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does make sense. So normally, I wouldn't suggest a C corporation for this situation. If a retirement plan wasn't involved, if there wasn't a ROB structure, and the ROB structure is really complex, but it can be something that can work for you. So it would take a long time to get into. Well, do you really want to do the ROB structure or not? But assuming that you do. And that it makes sense from the other avenues to do the ROB structure. The C corp is really your only choice in order to make this work. And the reason for that is, let me back up a little bit, and you can tell me if I'm getting a little far afield. Normally, if a retirement plan wasn't involved, I would say, don't set up a new entity, or don't choose to have this LLC taxed as a C corporation. Choose to have this LLC taxed as an S corporation. That would entirely be able to save on self-employment taxes, and you'd avoid double taxation with the C corporation. But with the retirement plan being involved, the retirement plan, you know, maybe being the owner of the LLC, retirement plans can't own entities that are taxed as S corporations. The only people that can own S corporations are people. They have to be individuals or those individuals' revocable living trusts, and those people have to be U.S. citizens. If a retirement account is going to own, so a 401k or an IRA or whatever is going to own an entity, that entity can't be taxed as an S corporation. It can be taxed as a C corporation. And the reason that the C corporation structure and this ROB structure may make sense for you, or at least having the LLC taxed as a C corporation, is because your business of selling insurance is an active operational business. So when your retirement account invests in a company that has ordinary operational income like yours does, it will be subject, the income that you make, the profit that you make, would normally be subject to something called unrelated business income tax, or UBIT. Have you heard that term?
No, I haven't. I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. And that's what the ROB structure is going to allow you to avoid. You don't want to pay UBIT tax. The IRS doesn't like to see, generally, retirement accounts involved in investing in operational businesses. So in order to, because they don't think it's fair that people who pay taxes are competing with retirement accounts that don't pay taxes in operational businesses. So in order to kind of level that playing field, they have this unrelated business income tax, or UBIT. I'm going to call it UBIT from now on, here on out, so it's not such a long name. But UBIT tax really gets ugly. It's paid at what are called trust tax rates. And what that means is that you start paying you get into the highest tax bracket really quickly. So after about $12,000 or so of income, you're paying tax on everything above $12,000 of income in a year at the 39.6% rate. If you're paying UBIT, the way to get around that is to have your LLC taxed as a C corporation, because the IRS has said if a retirement account invests in a company that's taxed as a C corporation, that company is paying corporate taxes, so it's paying taxes at the corporate rate on the profits. And then if and when any dividends are ever paid to the owners of that company that's taxed as a C corporation, the owners are paying taxes again. So what the C corporation taxation lets you do, it's kind of, there's a term for it out there, and you may want to Google it, called a blocker corporation. That's what your LLC that's taxed as a C corp now kind of becomes, is one of these blocker corporations, which means instead of paying UBIT, the IRS is going to let you slide on UBIT, basically, because your corporate taxes, because it's a C corporation. I know that was a really long answer. Did that make sense?
Yeah. No, I appreciate it.
Okay. So the C corp, the tax ramifications are your LLC used to not pay any taxes. It was everything flowed through to you, and you paid taxes on your income or loss on your personal tax return. Now that you're going to be taxed as a C corporation, your LLC will pay taxes at whatever the corporate rate is, you know, depending on how much income you make, and then all of the income will then be distributed out or go out as a dividend to your 401k if it's the 100% owner, and the 401k isn't going to pay taxes on its portion of the profits. So taxes will be paid, but at the corporate rate instead of that UBIT rate that I talked about.
Got it.
All right.
Hey, awesome. I really appreciate your feedback, and thanks for the help.
Hey, no problem, Mark. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot, Jerem.
Thanks. All right. We really appreciate Mark calling in. Anybody else who has a question, please feel free to call in. I will take your question first. I don't see any up. I don't have any notice from Lisa that there's another question, and I don't see anything in the chat window. So I'm going to go ahead and get to these emailed questions. Again, if I don't address your question, that means it was a tax question that I'm not going to get into, because I'm not a CPA. I'm just a humble attorney. The second question here, the first one that was emailed in, unfortunately, was a tax question, and that was from Richard. Just to let you know, Richard, if you're listening, I'm not going to be answering your question, so you may want to resubmit it. The next one's from Frank. Frank says, when dealing with self-directed IRA accounts, if I accidentally misuse funds from the account, is there a way to rectify the situation without incurring penalties or getting my self-directed IRA account liquidated? This is a good question, obviously. I would have a couple follow-up questions if Frank was on the line. I would want to know how exactly you may have, not saying you did, but how the funds may have been misused, what happened. The reason I would ask is because in a self-directed IRA account, you have a custodian. And so if you're investing directly in your IRA without an IRA LLC that you control, have that kind of checkbook control over, then you're going through your custodian anytime you do a transaction. It's the custodian that signs off when money goes into or out of that account. So if you did some sort of transaction that you're now looking at and thinking maybe this was a prohibited transaction or, you know, self-dealing in some way, if that was the case, if you did it directly through your IRA, I would talk to the custodian and say, hey, let's take a look at this transaction and see what happened. Because if they approved it, then it's possible that they may be on the hook more than you, possibly. However, if this was a transaction that you did within an IRA LLC, then you have the checkbook control over those IRA funds. You're the one who did the transaction. You wrote the check or did the wire transfer or whatever. So you don't have to go back to the custodian. And in this case, I wouldn't go back to the custodian. I would talk to an attorney about the situation, and preferably an attorney who knows what a self-directed IRA is and specializes in that area of the law. Not to be self-serving, but we would be a good way to go with that. So that the reason I would talk to an attorney is attorneys have, when you talk to an attorney, you have an attorney-client privilege, and we don't have to disclose the things that you talk to us about. We would want to look into whether a prohibited transaction actually occurred, and if we believe that it did, we can help you take steps to try to unwind or undo that transaction. Now, you wouldn't have to talk directly, we wouldn't have to inform your custodian of what's going on. We could try to undo the transaction within the IRA LLC. There are no guarantees on doing that. If you get audited by the IRS, it's going to, you know, and they see what happened, there may be consequences, but it's certainly better to try to undo the transaction than to do nothing, because if you do nothing and you get audited, you'll be in a world of hurt if it is determined that this is a prohibited transaction. So I guess the steps are talk to an attorney, get a consult, whether it's with us or somebody else who knows this area of the law, to find out, based on what happened here, is this a prohibited transaction or do we believe it is a prohibited transaction? If it is, we can help you take steps to undo it, and that's better than nothing, but it's not a magic eraser. It's not as if it never happened. And there may be, I'm getting something in the window here, that there may be a limit, and we can look into that. And if there's some sort of limit on the time to correct an error, certainly the sooner you do it, the better. And we can find out if in your situation there is some sort of time limit on rectifying that error. It's not a good situation to be in. There aren't great answers. But we can certainly help you take steps to try to rectify it as much as possible. So that's an excellent question. I appreciate you sending that in, Frank. Okay, yeah. You may have. I'm seeing Thomas put stuff up in the chat window. That very well could be, and I'll look into what the time limit is. I'm not aware off the top of my head what the time limit is on rectifying the error, and I will get back to Frank directly on what the time limit is. I appreciate that. The next question is from Sinan. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He says that a friend of his is setting up a land trust to hold real property. We, if you've read Mark's book, are not the biggest fans of land trusts. They can provide some level of anonymity or at least privacy. They don't in and of themselves provide any asset protection at all unless they're combined with an LLC, but that's kind of just a general about land trust, but that's not his question. He says that the friend asked him to be the trustee. He says that the friend is going to do the actual management of the assets and that he would just be a figurehead. He's going to sign checks and documents, and that's all he has to do. His question is whether there's any outside liability in being a trustee. Can the trustee be sued by someone outside the trust for trust-related issues? As in, if a tenant sues the trust, can they also sue the trustee? Are inherent liabilities with being a trustee of any trust? Those liabilities are to the beneficiaries of the trust. You have a fiduciary duty as a trustee of a trust to act as trustee in a way that is beneficial to the beneficiaries. You have to act in their best interests. That doesn't mean you can't make mistakes. That doesn't mean you can't that if you invest in something that loses money that you've violated or breached your fiduciary duty. What it means is basically you can't act in your own best interest, and you can't do something obviously that is openly fraud or that a prudent, not even prudent, but a reasonable person wouldn't have done. If you go and invest in something that an ordinary person would have thought, this is really questionable, and then you lose money, then you may be in trouble. But the person you would be in trouble with, or the people you'd be in trouble with, or the people that could sue you, would be the beneficiaries of the trust. Those are the people you have the fiduciary duties to. You don't necessarily have fiduciary duties, and you really don't have fiduciary duties to the tenants of a property owned by the land trust. If they think that the trust is dealing with them unfairly, though, and she's doing all the management, and you're just signing off on things, and you signed off on something that is proven to be fraudulent or negligent, then you could have some liability for signing off on that, because you have a duty to look into what the trust is doing and make sure it's not committing fraud. That's kind of your role. So if you go ahead and do this, Sinan, you're putting a lot of trust in your friend that they're going to do what's right from the management standpoint. And that only makes sense, even though they're going to, quote, be doing the real management, they're not supposed to as a non-trustee. That's really supposed to be you. So when you ratify their actions, and if they want to sue the trust, they can sue the trust. It's going to be hard for them to get any sort of liability against you. They may sue you as trustee of the trust, but at the end of the day, if they get a judgment, the tenant in this case, if they get a judgment against the land trust, then it's a judgment against the land trust and maybe against you as trustee of the land trust, but it really should only be the trust's assets that are at stake, unless they can prove that you personally committed some sort of fraud yourself, which is going to be hard for them to decide, or excuse me, to prove, because they have to prove you had some sort of intent. But it's not a great situation for you to just sign off on whatever's going on, because there could be some possible liability if the trust is doing something that's just blatantly fraudulent and you sign off on it. As with most legal questions, the answer is really it depends. So if you have any additional follow-up questions, then you can certainly set up a consultation with me or with Mark. That's kind of, yes, there are liabilities. If the trust isn't doing much, then those liabilities are pretty low. But if it's going to be owning rental properties, then that's not just a benign thing. Next question is from Dick. He's in North Carolina. He says, while doing the initial startup of my business, I used funds from my personal account, and now I'd like to start repaying those expenses. That happens a lot. My thought is to write a check from my business account to myself, but to classify the expense as whatever it was, i.e. equipment, travel, etc. Does that work? This really is a tax question. It's something that a CPA should try to answer for you. You should try to have a CPA answer. My understanding is that that should be fine, but I wouldn't quote me on that. I'm going to throw a disclaimer out there. I am just an attorney, not a CPA. I would talk to a CPA about that. I'm pretty sure that that is something that you're going to be able to do because businesses have startup costs before the actual entity exists and before the entity has a bank account, and those are generally up to, I think there are caps, and that's something you may want to talk to a CPA about. I think there are caps on what kinds of startup expenses and how much in terms of expenses that you can you can write off that way. But I would definitely talk to a CPA about that. Next question, and appreciate the question, Dick. Thank you. Next question is from Tara Lee. She says, if I let my timeshare go and don't pay assessment or maintenance fees, will it affect my credit in any way? The answer to that, and I'm not a specialist on credit, so you may want to talk to – this is – let me kind of get off the subject a little bit, on a little bit of a tangent, Tara Lee, and that is – there are credit repair companies out there and people who will charge you a fee to try to repair your credit. You really don't need to be paying anybody to do that sort of thing. There are credit counselors and free credit counselors and government entities and agencies that will help answer this sort of question for you and help you fix credit if you've got an issue and help you avoid credit problems. So don't pay anybody to fix your credit. There are free resources that you can take advantage of. So that being said, as far as abandoning your timeshare, because that's basically what this would be, it can affect your credit. If you own a timeshare in your own name and you just say, I can't afford it anymore, and I'm not going to pay what I'm supposed to pay for it, I'm not going to pay any assessments or maintenance fees that are billed to me, then those are billed to you, and the company that runs the timeshare or owns the timeshare can basically come after you for those, because those continue to accrue unless you do something with it, unless you give back the timeshare or sell it back or sell it to somebody else. If you just walk away, those continue to accrue in your name, and at some point, those folks can sue you and try to collect these fees that were yours. I do want to throw a disclaimer out here that I'm not an expert in timeshare law, but you're not generally able to just walk away from something. So the answer, as in most situations, is not to put your head in the sand and not read your mail and not contact these people. It's to, contact them and say, I can't afford this timeshare anymore. I don't want it. I don't want to pay these assessments. What can I do? Can you help me find somebody to sell it to? It's not going to be a good situation for you or for me if I'm not able to afford this. What can we do? So that would be, it's always best to communicate. So that would be my advice, is to try to communicate with the timeshare company and try to get it sold to somebody else or sold back to the timeshare company, or even not even sold, maybe just transferred back to the timeshare company so that they can sell it to somebody else. Next, and I appreciate that, Tara Lee. Next question is from Maurice. He says, I'm interested in partnering in a business venture with two other people. Do we need separate lawyers or just one to form a corporation for our company? If you're getting into a business venture with other people, with partners, and you're going to be setting up a corporation or an LLC or any sort of business entity, it makes sense for everybody to be – well, let me back up. In a perfect world where everybody's got enough funds to do so, it makes sense for everybody to be represented separately and for everybody to have their own counsel who looks at the documents and say, yeah, these look good. A lot of times, just everybody getting together and pooling their money enough to have one attorney to take a look at things, it can be difficult. So the economic realities may make it so that I can't have – we don't all have enough money to pay separate attorneys. But you are separate people. You're partners in this company, but you are separate people and with separate interests. So you want to make sure that if it's a corporation, the bylaws, or if it's an LLC, that the operating agreement says what you want it to say and everybody understands it. When we set up entities for people, because we'll do this where, people who are partners come in – and they want to set up an LLC or they want to set up a corporation or a limited partnership or whatever, we make it clear, and we actually have a form when we set up entities that lets everybody know we don't represent any one of you. We represent the entity. We helped you set up this entity, and we represent the entity, not any of you. So if you want an attorney to look at this, you need to do so. But we don't represent any of the partners. We represent the entity, and we're helping you set up this entity. And we can talk to everybody and try to make sure everyone is on the same page. But if it's a partnership where you know a lot of money is at stake or the people have the funds to do so, I would suggest that everyone have a separate attorney take a look at the documents. Again, that may not be economically feasible, but if it is, it's certainly not a bad idea. Maurice had a follow-up question where he asks, are all 501c corporations not-for-profit? That's a bit of a tax question, but my understanding is that, yeah, if you're a 501c, and when people always think, well, a 501c3, and 501c3 is the most common version of the 501c tax-exempt organization, but there are actually 501c1s, all the way through 501c29s. So there are 29 different designations. A couple of them don't really exist anymore, but there are several designations for things like, there's some funny ones, I've got them up here. There's cemetery companies are 501c13s. So they're kind of really, black lung benefit are 501c21s. So there are really specific kinds of 501c's that can apply for tax-exempt status. If someone is a recognized 501c, be it a 501c3 or a 501c1 or 501c26, they are tax-exempt. But just because someone says they're a 501c, you know, you don't have to take that at face value. They may or may not be. So it's something to look into if you're skeptical, and you can find out if someone is actually a tax-exempt organization. So that's my two cents there. Then I've got a couple more tax questions here. Deanna and Dan, your questions, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to answer because they are tax-related, or not just tax-related, but tax-specific. Let me get back to, sorry, I'm bringing up some information here. Yeah, there we go, the studio back up, sorry. The next question is from Lucien. I have no idea, Lucien. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. But he says his brother and him are purchasing an investment property in North Carolina. And they want to rent it as a vacation rental 16 weeks out of the year and then have the remainder of the time of the year have the property open for personal use. He says, would it be a smart choice to hold the property in an LLC with he and I as members and then have an operating agreement outlining the details? Yes. That would be without knowing more, and again, there's always details that come into play here. But I think having this property, it's not going to be anybody's personal residence, it doesn't sound like. If it was a personal residence, my advice would be different. I don't want generally an LLC owning a personal residence for tax reasons. You'll blow your sale of home exemption. So if it's not anybody's personal residence, but it's a income-generating property for roughly one-third of the year, and then the other two-thirds of the year, it can be used for personal use by the owners of the LLC, then yeah, for asset protection reasons, I absolutely would own that property in the name of an LLC. That way, if something bad happens out on the property and somebody wants to sue the property owner, it's not you and your brother personally on title, it's your LLC. And worst case scenario, they may be able to get at the equity in that one property to satisfy a judgment against the LLC, but they're not going to be able to get at your personal assets or your brother's personal assets. So the LLC makes a lot of sense. And then obviously, yes, even in a single-member LLC where it's just one owner, an operating agreement is an excellent thing to have from a maintaining the corporate veil standpoint. And certainly when two people are involved, even if they're brothers or spouses, an operating agreement that specifies who's doing what, who is, what are the profit percentages, what are the ownership percentages, who's doing what, you definitely want to have an operating agreement. So we're huge fans of that. his next follow-up is, we are both S-Corp business owners. Not sure if this comes into play or makes a difference. It only does in that, I wouldn't want for this kind of LLC for the S-corporations to be the owners of your interests in the LLC. That's because, and to get into the tax nitty-gritty, I wish I had Mark here, but for tax reasons, LLCs that own rental properties, which is what this is, you're going to have rental income. I wouldn't want taxed as an S-corporation. There you can lose your or kind of hamstrung in your ability to deduct things like mortgage interest and depreciation. So generally, if you're getting rental income, you don't want to be taxed as an S-corporation. I know, well, with short-term rentals, that's something to definitely maybe talk to a CPA about. Short-term rentals like this can be considered operational income. So this is kind of morphed into a tax question. I would talk to Mark or another CPA or one of Mark's personal tax consultants about whether this is income that's going to be subject to self-employment tax. If it is, then you may want to hold it in an LLC still, but have that LLC, instead of being owned by you and your brother directly, to be owned by your S-corps. So he says he's just trying to confirm the best entity structure. It's either going to be an LLC, either owned by you and your brother personally, if this is income that's not subject to self-employment tax, or owned by your S-corps if it is. So that's kind of my story, and I'm sticking to it for that question. Thanks a bunch, Lucien. It looks like I've got another question. A question from Thomas in the chat window. He says, what's the best way to avoid conflicts in a partnership? Any tips and tricks to make it go smoothly, happily, and profitably? My colleague Lee Chen, he preaches this, and so do I. The best way to preserve harmony in a partnership is not to assume anything. Don't assume that your partner knows what you know about, well, this is how we're structuring it. We're 50-50, and I'm doing this, and you're doing that. If you have a partnership and you're doing different things, you have different responsibilities, you have different duties, put those in writing. Whether it's just something that, best case scenario is you probably got an LLC or a joint venture agreement that specifically, you know, if you've got an LLC, you've got an operating agreement. If you're joint venture partners, you've got a joint venture agreement that says what everybody's doing, what everybody's getting in terms of profit, what everybody's getting in terms of if there's a loss, who gets the loss, what everybody is responsible for in terms of expenses that the company might have if we're just splitting them evenly, or if I take care of this kind of expense and you take care of this other kind of expense. You got to have that in writing. There's got to be some sort of agreement if you're being partners. What is our partnership? What's our goal? What are we trying to get out of this? That all needs to be in writing. So my tip and trick is to put your partnership terms down in a document. And the best way to do that would be either to form an LLC if it's going to be a long-term relationship where we're maybe doing more than just one project, then let's form an LLC. And our operating agreement is going to set forth all of that. If not, maybe it's a one-off project, then maybe a joint venture agreement that says what we're going to do. Or maybe we'll form just a general partnership and do a partnership agreement for that. Those things are things that you just need to have in writing. So that's my number one tip for a partnership is don't just do it on a handshake. Don't just do it on a phone call or an email. Get things down in writing in an actual contract that's enforceable and that has the terms spelled out clearly or as clearly as you can. This is the last question I think that I'm going to have time to answer. It says, it's from Bob in Ohio. He says, the mortgage on my home is paid off. I'm looking for a simple and inexpensive way to protect it from a lawsuit. He says, does having an unused and unneeded home equity line of credit help me in any of these events? He says specifically, a loss from an earthquake or flood or something like that. That's different. That's where insurance comes in. But to protect it from creditors, A home equity line of credit that you don't use is going to dissuade some creditors. They're going to see it on there, and they're not going to want to come after it. In other cases, somebody who's serious, if you haven't used it, will go far enough to see that, oh, it hasn't been used, so there is still a lot of equity in the home. Here's where I would say, read Mark and my article. I co-wrote it with Mark about the Domestic Asset Protection Trust. That's an excellent vehicle to your home in a situation where you've got a lot of equity. Look into the DAP. We do them here in Utah. So we can help you with that. Give me a call or give Mark a call about that. I just want to say thanks to Mark. Thanks to Mark who called in. Thanks to Mark Kohler for letting me host the show. Appreciate it. Keep living the dream. And tune in next week. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.